630 Chad presents The Elks This Week. A close-up look at the Elks and the Canadian Football League. Every week, we take you inside the game. From the voice of the Edmonton Elks, 630 Chad. Here's Morley Scott.
Well, good morning, football fans. Another week gone, another week closer to training camp. Yeah, about 2 weeks away. It's Dave Campbell and for Morley Scott here on the Elks This Week on 630 Chad. Morley will be back in a couple of weeks. We got a game to broadcast later on this month as well. In fact, it'll happen about a month from today, May the 25th at home at Commonwealth Stadium against the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. We are talking about the CFL draft coming up on Tuesday at 6 o'clock. The Elks have 8 selections, the first overall selection, 2 in the second round, 1 in the third round, 2 in the fourth. They won't pick in rounds 5 or 6, and then they'll have 1 pick in each the 7th and 8th rounds. Also, the global draft will be earlier that day as well at 9 a.m. It's a 2-round draft. The Elks will have the first overall selection and the first selection in round number 2. We'll hear right away here from Chris Jones, the head coach and GM of the Edmonton Elks. We'll also hear later on in the show from two very prominent members of the media side that are very good as far as knowing the draft prospects and the draft process itself. Two people that work on the CFL on TSN, Marshall Ferguson and Duane Ford. So, with the Elks having the first overall selection, it's not exactly a position you want because that means you had a bad year the prior season. In fact, the Elks have had a bad year, the 3 straight seasons. It's been really, really rough for the Elks. But they do have the first overall pick, and Chris Jones talked about the significance of the first overall pick.
Well, we've picked first overall too much lately, and it's not something that I'm used to, quite honestly. I mean, we've been very good for a long time at all of the other different places I've been. And for whatever reason, we've had 3 years in a row picking first. So we've got to fix that, or at least picking, early in the draft. And so we knew that this draft was coming and that there was a lot of kids pushing back from the COVID and all that kind of business. And, it's twofold. We thought it was going to be actually a little bit stronger than what it's ending up being. These kids are performing. The Canadian kids are performing at such a high level that they're going to get opportunities to go to the NFL, which changes the mindset. So it's a very good draft. It's not as strong as what we first envisioned, but we set it up where we've got a 1, 2 twos, a 3, and 2 fours. So we've got, 6 to the top 30, I think it's 31 picks. So, I mean, we're sitting in a pretty good position.
When you look at the NFL draft, which I'm sure you'll be keeping an eye on, and maybe, after the draft when, there could be the rookie camp invites or the undrafted free agent signings, how much does what happened after the NFL draft or, let's say, during affect your draft board, following the NFL draft up to when it's draft day on Tuesday?
If a kid gets drafted, you're certainly not going to waste the draft, a draft spot on him in the Canadian draft, because you're going to be waiting on that guy for too long. If a guy gets enough money, they call it PFAs, priority free agents. And so if a guy's a priority free agent and he's getting, a good chunk of money, then there's somebody sitting in that room that puts their name on that guy that says, hey, XYZ is good enough to get X number of dollars. And so somebody's got to own that. I think you'll see that a lot of the guys at the top of the draft board for us, a lot of the big offensive linemen that we have that are Canadian, a lot of those kids are going to get opportunities at the NFL level.
Now, when you talk about the O-line class, and it seems like that's, I don't know if this is correct, but it seems like the O-line class is pretty good and pretty deep. So when those players start dropping down the board, is that a benefit to have a deep draft where, hey, you're going to get some good offensive linemen still, even though the top guys may not be available to you?
Yeah, I think that there's 12, we've got like 12 draftable offensive linemen in this draft, if you included the the NFL guys. I mean, there's five or six of those guys. So there's another six that, you know, are good enough to come in and I would say develop, you know, kind of like what we've been doing with Grahovic. You know, he's a very good player. And last year he was on the roster some, off the roster some, you know. And so there's a lot of guys that are a lot like Grahovic that that are there for you to take and try to develop.
Tell me about the combine format. Second year in a row. It's a longer format. You see more football related activity instead of, you know, the 40 and the short shuttle and the broad jump and that sort of thing. It was introduced a year ago in Edmonton. So this is the second straight year. Has that really helped in your, in the process to draft and the process to evaluate the talent? Is it?
It has.
Yeah.
It has. Because a lot of these kids, you don't get to see them firsthand, you know, as a head coach. You don't get to see these Canadian kids firsthand. And so it's a good opportunity to see them. And, you know, you see them in pads doing one-on-ones versus in shorts doing one-on-ones. You know what I mean? So that and a little bit of team and a little bit of Skelly, you know, sometimes it seemed to drag a little bit, you know, but hey, you know, it's kind of like the bowl games, the All-Star games that we go to in January and February. It's the same way. A lot of times the practices drag because, I mean, they're just now learning the plays. And so it makes it a little bit slower getting in and out of the huddle and that type of thing. But, you know, you just sit there and bear with it. And like I say, it's good that we get to see these kids, you know, in a football uniform, not just in shorts.
And imagine you get to see which kids are coachable and maybe which kids are not.
Yeah, you know, and that's why it's good to have a coach or two to really be in those meetings and listen and watch how they learn and that type thing, you know. And it's you know, it's a catch 22 because if you fly your whole staff in, then it's a big expense. And then if you only have a few, then you're not getting the info you need. So it's kind of a, you have to find that happy medium.
Joined by Elks head coach and GM Chris Jones here on the Elks This Week on 630 CHED. Dave Campbell in for Morley Scott this weekend. Tell me about how fluid the draft can be, you know, the lead up to it. 48 hours before, 24 hours before, hours before, you know, like the calls you might get for your first overall pick, for example. How fluid is that process as you get closer to the draft?
Yeah, I mean, it's like I say, I mean, the draft's a really exciting time, and quite honestly, Canadian content, with the exception of quarterbacks, probably the number one indicator of winning. So, I mean, having players that are good enough come out of this draft that can, you know, get on the field and get on the field early and be solid contributors. I mean, it's one of the, like I say, one of the biggest indicators of who's going to be successful, not only now, but in the future. And that's kind of, as we've drafted over the last couple of years, we've tried to really, you know, look at guys that are going to be able to have some longevity to them, you know. And and it's, everybody makes such a big deal out of the first pick, you know. Oh my God, the first pick. I mean, yeah. You got to look at, I mean, every pick counts. I mean, it's not like where the first pick's making millions of dollars, you know, and he's the highest paid. It's not like the NFL. Like every, the third, fourth picks, I mean, there's a lot of guys that can really play, and they're making the same money as the first round pick. So I mean, it's that's where there's a big misconception, you know. Yeah. But I mean, they have them ranked for a reason, you know. Certainly the guys in the first round are probably a little bit better than the guys in the second, but there's a whole bunch of third and fourth round guys that end up, you know, being on rosters for a long, long time.
You mentioned how better the Canadian talent is getting. So that being said, are there more Canadians that are being drafted that are pro-ready and that could maybe make a contribution in year one that maybe in the past you didn't see it as much?
Yeah, you know, I would have to agree with that. I mean, You know, we're looking at trying to, the first three picks that we have, or we're hoping our guys that can be in uniform for us this year playing. And that's kind of a priority for us. I mean, we went through last year and we looked at all the kids that we had drafted. I think we had 12 or 13, you know, guys over the first two drafts that we've had that were actually playing a lot of football, which, like I say, if you look at it in the big picture, you know, whether it's now or whether it's two or three years from now, I think that that's going to really bode well for our organization. These kids getting to play early in their careers, and whether it's on offense, defense, or the four core special teams. And we've got a good group of 12 or 13 kids that are getting to play a lot of football.
Global draft is earlier that day in the morning at 9 o'clock Edmonton time. Two rounds, you have the first pick in each round. Is the global talent getting better? I guess I'll just be blunt and say, is it getting better?
I believe it is. Getting the word out to the universities about two things. First of all, our Canadians, if some of the Canadian kids that are down there, they don't even know that they're Canadian, that their parents, you know, kind of like Alex Singleton and Ben Cahoon and some of those guys that have, you know, basically they're Canadian and they don't even know. And so, just like this year's DeBlanco, you know, he didn't even know, you know, until very late in the process. And there's two or three more. And so I think that, along with the globals, there was a kid that just got added that had no idea that he could be considered a global. And we went by his school in November, and I know a couple of coaches there. And the next thing you know, now this kid's in the global draft, and he's going to probably get an NFL look. So, I mean, he's a good solid guy to add to our global draft.
Now, last year, your global was Dean Faithful, the kicker. He's still on the roster. You got Boris Speedy now. Is your global player going to have to come through this draft?
More than likely. I mean, it's you don't go out and get a guy like Boris Speedy and you know, not expect him to come in and be a big contributor to what you're doing. So we'll let it play out in camp, but certainly everybody's going to have a really good opportunity to come in and compete.
And final question for you. A couple of weeks ago, you signed some depth on the O-line in Hunter Stewart and Shane Richards. And then on the your receiver group, you brought in Hergie Mayala. All, as we're talking about drafts, all former first-round picks. Shane Richards was a first overall pick. So tell me about bringing in those three veterans into camp.
Yeah, well, it's something that we've done before. We did it in Edmonton the year we won it in 15. You know, I think it was Shamaud, and there were two or three more. I can't even remember. And, you know, you bring some guys. I mean, once upon a time, people thought very highly of these guys, and they're, you know, but on the flip side of the coin, they're on the street for a reason. So now you bring them in, and you give them an opportunity. And if we hit one out of three, or if you hit two out of three, certainly, you know, we're winning. And like I told G, I said, you know, with these guys that are going to the NFL, you know, you bring these guys in with an opportunity to add depth at the tackle position, because we're playing with four, and, you know, and put them with a Grahovic to figure out who your six is going to be. It's going to be the six best guys play, and then there's going to be a guy on PR, and there's going to be a guy on one game. I mean, that's just the way it structures out.
That's Elks GM and head coach Chris Jones talking about this Tuesday's draft, the global draft as well. When we come back, we'll hear from Duane Ford and Marshall Ferguson from the CFL and TSN and get their perspective on the Elks draft, and basically a big opportunity for the Elks to improve their Canadian content. My name is Dave Campbell in for Morley Scott this Saturday on the Elks This Week on 630 CHED.
More football talk on the Elks This Week. Here's Morley Scott on the voice of the Edmonton Elks, 630 CHED.
Welcome back to the Elks This Week on 630 Chad. Dave Campbell in for Morley Scott this Saturday morning. Elks This Week on the transaction wire signed three players, two Americans, and two on the defensive side. American defensive lineman Randy Charlton, who is from Mississippi State, and Aubrey Miller Jr., a linebacker out of Jackson State University. And the Elks signed a player from their draft class from last season, Spencer Masterson, who was picked in the sixth round, only played in the preseason. In fact, the first preseason game where he suffered a season-ending injury. So the former Guelph Griffin will be back in training camp for in a couple of weeks for the Edmonton Elks, who pick first overall, have six picks in the first 31 selections. Dwayne Ford and Marshall Ferguson from the CFL on TSN, the draft experts in this country, they spent some time with the media, and I asked, first starting with Dwayne, about the opportunity the Elks have here to improve their football team, having six picks in the first 31 selections.
One of the things that has really hit me about this draft is when you look at the success of certain teams in recent years, it's kind of neat to see the role that the draft has played in that, right? Like when you look at Montreal last year, obviously some Americans that made some big plays for them, but when you look at the impact of Canadians that they have drafted highly, sort of since 2020, that was very apparent, right? Marc-Antoine Dacroix, Pierre-Olivier Lestage, Tyson Philpott, Lual Ugoak, all playing a pretty significant role in a Grey Cup run. You look at what Toronto has become as a pretty good football team in this league, as a Grey Cup contender. A lot of that is built around their Canadian depth, right? We talked about it on broadcast last year. This was a team that loses Curley Gittens Jr., who most people would have labeled as their best Canadian player, and then proceeds to start three Canadians in their receiving corps for the rest of the year and doesn't miss a beat. And we know about the strength and depth of the Canadians on their offensive line. So, yeah, very important for Edmonton in that regard. If you want to get back in the hunt, this is one of the places that is critical for you. And, you know, one of the other pieces being, you mentioned the number of relatively early picks they have in this draft. In a draft where there are going to be a number of guys who are seen as futures and building the pipeline, yeah, you put yourself in a good position, not just in terms of the way that your team is built when you're able to pick a couple of those guys because you have extra picks at certain stages in the draft. You put yourself in a good spot for your pipeline, but it also puts you in a good spot for future drafts, right? And again, this is where I go back to Toronto. Toronto's put themselves in a position to be able to draft guys that they can wait for because they already have depth. And that's one of the things that I would think that Edmonton will work towards a little bit.
You know, another factor, too, with Chris Jones is he's not afraid to trade on draft day as well. And he did it 2 years ago with the first overall pick. Traded down from one to fourth overall, picked Enoch Mokonzo, linebacker out of Coastal Carolina. Then it added another first-round pick at eighth overall. And we know that was quarterback Trey Ford. But Marshall Ferguson says the one thing the Elks have done the last couple of years, especially under Chris Jones, is retain draft picks.
Even though they're drafting futures, they're also retaining their own draft picks more than anybody else, which is 37% of the time. Edmonton is right in the middle of the pack at 31, and Montreal is actually the lowest at 23%. So Montreal has retained the lowest percentage of their own draft picks over the last 10 years. Obviously, that's through a variety of different regimes and decision makers, but the ones that Dwayne was mentioning there, whether it be Pierre-Olivier Lestage, Marc-Antoine Dacroix, Tyson Philpott, on and on, when they have hit with their early round picks, they have really hit. And that's what I think Chris Jones should be trying to do at this point is, okay, yeah, we've got all of these picks. Yes, we'd like to get back into the playoff race in the West. How are we going to do that? Well, are we going to take a bunch of players and try to get them all out onto the field and see what happens? No, the thing is, and this is the reality of the draft, you either hit on your top couple of picks and they make a huge difference for you, or you don't, and then you are at risk of not being in your current job anymore. So the way that I see it is they've got all of those picks up in the top end, and looking back through their draft history the last couple of years, they've retained most of those players, like Jacob Taylor, Philip Grahovic, Luke Burton-Cron, Noah Curtis, Bruno Lagasse, Michael Broderick obviously being the second pick, Enoch Mokonzo, you mentioned Trey Ford, on and on and on the list goes. They've got a variety of positions. They've drafted well. They're developing from within. That's great, but you're sitting in a pretty good spot this year to try and make a major splash. And it's not just the first pick. I honestly, my favorite part of the draft is the second round, which might seem counterintuitive, but I've always believed that the first round is where we overhype things and we take, some teams take shots in the dark, or maybe you're hoping, or maybe it's a futures pick, or you want to be able to have possession of a player for when they eventually do come up. The second round is where you typically go and get the player who's going to be in training camp on your roster and give you a chance to play right now. And to Edmonton's credit, you're looking at 10, 18, 21. Yes, they have 30th and 31st, but based on the depth of this draft, the variety of positions we've talked about, I hope that one goes well for Edmonton. We'll see what they decide to do with it. I think Edmonton's draft will actually be defined by 10th overall, 18th overall, and 21st overall.
Great perspective from both Marshall Ferguson and Dwayne Ford from the CFL on TSN about the 2024 CFL draft, which goes at 6 o'clock on Tuesday. Elks are the first overall pick. And the names, could it be linebacker Joe DeBlanco? Could it be linebacker Jeffrey Canton-Arku? Could it be a couple receivers in Kevin Mitel or Nick Mardner? Or it could be someone else, because it is the CFL draft after all. Thank you for joining us on the Elks This Week. Appreciate you tuning in. Morley will be back next week to talk about all the post-draft coverage, and we'll know by then who the Elks did pick first overall. Thank you for listening. Have a great weekend.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.